Welcome to Higher Ed, KUT's podcast focusing on issues of higher education, lifelong learning, and exercising the brain. I'm Jennifer Staton with KUT 90.5, Austin's NPR station, talking as always with Dr. Ed Berger, president of Southwestern University in Georgetown, Texas. Hello, Ed.
Hello, Jennifer.
I am so glad to have you here today. Always so much fun to have our discussions and wrestle over these topics. I always leave feeling energized. These discussions.
I never thought of this as wrestling before, but
well,
I suppose.
Not literally.
I didn't know that they do that on NPR.
Not literally.
I see.
Figuratively wrestling.
Okay, so good. Intellectually wrestling.
Intellectually wrestling. So we hear from listeners who comment on the show, and they also will write in with topic ideas. And you can do that, by the way. Also, if you have a topic you'd like us to wrestle with in a future episode, just shoot me an email, jstayton, S-T-A-Y-T-O-N, at KUT.org. That's jstayton at KUT.org. And we'll look at that and maybe take it on in a future episode. We heard from Bill, who emailed in. It was actually kind of a response to an episode a little ways back. And I want to read you from his email and kind of put his question out there on the table. So this is what he wrote in. What role does education play in creativity, which synthesizes, combines, and reformulates existing ideas and knowledge, rather than in generating original creative thought? Compare and contrast original thought with synthesized thought. So Bill goes on to write, I recall one podcast episode in which you, Ed, briefly mentioned that nearly all new ideas stem from pre-existing knowledge. And then Bill put in parentheses, perhaps Isaac Newton and Albert Einstein are exceptions. So Bill is interested to hear about comparing and contrasting original thought with synthesized thought, you know, combining, reformulating existing ideas, stirring them together, seeing what comes up. So what do you have to say about comparing and contrasting original thought with synthesized thought?
Well, I see them as essentially the same thing. And it's interesting that he mentions Isaac Newton and Albert Einstein as exceptions to the notion of stemming from pre-existing knowledge, because Isaac Newton himself actually has this very, very famous quote where he says, and I'm not going to get it right, but that the reason why he sees what he sees is because he was standing on the shoulders of giants, which is an example of the fact that we use, I mean, I love this idea of synthesized thought that Bill suggests. Never thought of that before, and I think that's exactly right. I think that all creativity is, in fact, synthesized thought, and original thought is synthesized thought. I see them as being the same.
Okay,
because you're not going to just kind of have a quantum jump and I mean, I guess these things do happen from time to time, accidentally or otherwise, but most often than not, human original thought comes from a deep understanding of the current suite of ideas and then moving that frontier a little bit forward.
Okay, so I want to ask you a philosophical question then, because I think this is fascinating.
Go
so
ahead.
If I am a three-week-old baby,
yes.
All right, so I'm new to the planet and everything I'm experiencing is new to me, and I have a thought that goes something like, I like looking at that. That's appealing or fun to look at. That's an original thought to baby, but it's not an original thought in the universe, because everybody may think that, a cute kitten is appealing to look at, but it's original to that being.
Well, it's an original emotion. I don't think it's a thought. I mean, so I feel I like looking at that color or I like that soft fur of the cat. That's a feeling. Feelings, of course, we can have, and those could be completely independent of other things. That's right. You can feel a certain way. I'm talking about thought.
Mm-hmm.
And a thought and a feeling, I think, are not always the same thing.
I guess what I'm trying to say is, so let's say a person has a thought. A person could have a thought that's original to them.
Correct.
But it may not be original in
the world
pantheon of
ideas.
Of thought.
Absolutely.
Right.
In fact, when students often make discoveries for themselves, where they say, oh, like in my with me, they'll come up with a mathematical thing, and I get so excited. Now, is it brand new to humankind? Well, maybe not. I mean, a lot of times, by the way, the answer is yes. We have folks at Southwestern University, undergraduates, who are making new discoveries. But, you know, occasionally you stumble upon something that's new to you, but not new to the universe of ideas. Well, I still think it's a celebration. If it's new to you, then you created it, and that's wonderful. Now, does it move human understanding forward? Well, not that alone, but maybe the next step would take that person to something new. By the way, it brings up another idea, which is not what Bill's asking about, but here's a question that mathematicians always struggle with. Are ideas mathematical? Well, let me put it this way. Are mathematical truisms, like theorems, are they invented or discovered?
So in other words, is the concept out there waiting to be stumbled upon?
Correct.
Or do mathematicians create new
right.
concepts?
Exactly.
I think it's related. It's, I think it's a...
Well, maybe, maybe that's what Bill's
yeah,
trying to get
well,
at.
Well, I think it's part of this really kind of beefy concept that he's raised as a question that we're kind of trying to take some stabs at here is, you know, which one is it? And that's fascinating.
We look at the world through our minds, which have been influenced by pre-existing knowledge. So I don't see how you can divorce yourself from all of your human history and come up with genuinely what Bill calls an original thought, which seems to be divorced of all other thought. I just don't know how you do that. I mean, our minds work, they're evolutionary objects. They continue to grow. They're like computers. They are being fed more and more, and therefore they ideally are producing better and better thoughts and bigger and newer thoughts. So to me, I really do see the synthesized thought as the road to creativity, the road to new knowledge, the road to new ideas.
And I think another interesting aspect of this is, you know, there are some elements that I believe research will show are universal sort of across cultures and across geography. Mm. I think babies babbling, for example, I think all babies sort of babble in a similar way, kind of no matter where they were born or where they grow up. But the more that they hear and are influenced by the sounds around them in the place where they live and in the culture where they live, then their vocalizations start to mimic what they're hearing around them.
Interesting.
So I think it's interesting to also sort of think about culture and geography, because there'll be some, you know, some information that young people will be exposed to will be unique to where they are. But then especially now with travel and the internet, so much more is universal.
And, you know, there might be disciplines where, in fact, you know, what Bill's pointing out is something that really does take shape. But I'm just thinking through it in my own mind. Certainly in mathematics, this is not the case. So in mathematics, it's a playground for, in fact, synthesized thought.
Uh-huh.
New ideas come from synthesized ideas. But I'm thinking about, like, in the fine arts. I mean, when you create a new genre of art, I'm just thinking about in the visual world of art, whether it's painting or sculpture, often it is a reaction to what was done. I mean, so the Impressionists were trying to react against realism, and then there's modernism, then postmodernism, and then cubism. These were all reactions, and these were all genuinely new ideas, new creativity, but influenced by trying to react to other ideas, which is why I think of synthesized thought as the way to new thought.
Yeah, I think it's so interesting because I had the same thought as you did about thinking about fine arts, and I was thinking specifically about theater and acting,
mm-hmm.
and how, you know, you see a play, and of course it's based on a text, it's based on the script of a play, but you know, you give that script to 10 different actors and you'll get 10 different performances, 10 different interpretations. They're going to be new creations, but they're based on that actor's own experience, perhaps what plays they've done before, what directions they've received, and the text itself.
Right.
So there's not going to be a brand new event that comes out of that. It's going to be shaped. It's going to be a new interpretation, but it's going to be shaped by all of those other factors.
And it can go in all sorts of different directions. One of my, you know, favorite plays is Kiss Me, Kate, which is Cole Porter. You know, Cole
uh-huh.
Porter was really good. And that was influenced by Taming of the Shrew, which goes back. I mean, so and I'm sure that was influenced by something maybe that goes back to the Greeks for all we know, right? So you can see evolution, but it is evolution.
I think I'm supposed to say now it's all Greek to me, right?
Oh, look.
Uh-huh. So,
please.
That you walked right into that one.
That was a mistake.
You walked right into that one. All right. So what I want to know is what I know is not new knowledge. It's going to be synthesized answer to last week's puzzler.
Oh, about cigarettes. I do not like and endorse cigarettes, by the way. So I'm not even happy to have a puzzler about cigarettes, but it's a fun one.
And there's a math aspect to this. And I have to say, well, let's hear it.
Okay. So let me remind our listeners.
Yeah.
So we have a smoker who doesn't want to buy cigarettes. And instead, this person picks up butts. And I guess we have to assume that they're not filtered, so the tobacco goes all the way through.
Okay. You know,
okay. And so picks up butts from the ground. And it turns out that when this person collects 4 butts, that person can remove the unused tobacco and roll it into a brand new cigarette and then can smoke it.
Okay.
Okay. And so the question is, suppose the person finds 16 cigarette butts. The question is, how many cigarettes can he make and smoke?
So sort of the obvious first answer I thought of is 4 cigarettes.
And why is that?
Because if you've got 16 butts, mm-hmm. and it's 4 butts for each new cigarette,
right.
16 divided by, 4 times 4 is 16.
Right.
So 16 butts, 4 butts per cigarette, you could get 4 cigarettes?
So you get 4 cigarettes.
Well, that's the kind of that's the first math answer that I thought. But then I started thinking, well, but would the paperwork? Is there something about the?
There's no paperwork here.
No, not paperwork. No. With paper,
you have to fill out a form.
Know, the short butt.
No. Let's just push on your solution
okay.
a little bit.
So that was the first math solution.
It's a great
that
guess.
Into
and
my
now
head.
let's think through that together.
Okay.
So now the person has these 4
yes.
cigarettes.
And here you can see them in my illustration.
Yeah,
here are
she's holding it up.
There
and I can
they
see
are.
Them.
Okay.
Right. And now. So he can smoke those 4, as you point out, uh-huh. and each one of those 4 would lead to a butt.
Oh.
And so what can he do after he smokes those 4?
Well, those 4
make,
could
he can make one more.
A fifth cigarette.
Exactly. So he can make 5
what?
Cigarettes.
It fascinating.
So the answer is 5 because the 4 he can make from the 16 he picks up, but then once he makes those 4 and smokes them,
that's,
he will have 4 extra new butts which he
creates,
can put together.
Oh,
and
I
so
love,
he has
I love that
another,
one.
So another fifth cigarette, which we do not like. We do not endorse smoking on higher ed.
No, but I love the math.
Good.
I love the math and the logic of that. And I also like how I didn't get the last step. And I like how I think that's going to help me think about some puzzlers and other things differently in the future because I stopped. I stopped too soon.
Exactly.
Is essentially
let
what
that
I did,
person
so.
Smoke.
Now,
smoke the cigar, the cigarettes.
I will say, related to our question from Bill, I actually think this is a perfect puzzler for this because I don't smoke and I've never smoked, so I have no knowledge to bring.
Nothing to synthesize. To,
I have no information
good
to synthesize to create a solution to this.
I'm such an anti-smoker that when I stumble upon some of my students who I discover are smoking, I try to encourage them, force them to try to stop. And often I get them to stop.
It's interesting to think about that topic of cigarette smoking and this idea of original thought and synthesized thought because you know, you can think about cigarette smoking or a lot of other activities. There's a lot of information out there mm-hmm. about, you know, say the dangers of cigarette smoking or drinking alcohol, whatever, you know,
right.
eating not healthy foods, whatever the case
whatever
may be.
Whatever your vice.
We synthesize that, but we still don't always act on it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm getting a little off the topic here, but it's interesting to think that of all the thought that's out there and all the information that we have access to and all that we have learned, there's still a very human element
and
to
it
some
gets
of this.
And it gets back to impactful learning. When you actually truly make meaning of something, what are you going to do about it? And so if you believe that cigarette smoking is not good for you and you're a smoker, what are you going to do about it? And to me, that's impactful learning. It is right on course because you're going to forget the calculus class you take with me. But if you can, when you learn something, say, okay, now how do I respond to that new intellectual stimulation, well, I've got to stop smoking or I've got to eat differently or whatever it is, then that is a new idea. And then you are, in fact, synthesizing thought and you're creating an original thought in your own mind, which is I've got to stop mm-hmm. this habit or whatever it is. So I think it's exactly to Bill's point.
Well, Bill, thank you for your excellent question about original thought and synthesized. That
you
is hard
say
to
that.
Say.
It's synthesized.
Hard to say. Synthesized thought. It's hard to say those two words together. Synthesized
thought. I have no problem with that. You know what I can't say, though? What do you call it when a doctor puts something in his or her ears?
Stethoscope?
Yeah, I can't say
that's
that.
That's a tough one, too.
I can't say that. Say that again.
Stethoscope.
Okay, you say that, and I'll say synthesized thought.
Okay, and then we're
all set.
And we'll do a future episode on speech. Ed, thank you for helping us keep our brains sharp. Dr. Ed Berger is president of Southwestern University in Georgetown. Find out more at southwestern.edu. And you can keep your brain busy by keeping up with the news and other episodes of Higher Ed at KUT.org and also on iTunes. I'm Jennifer Staten with KUT News.